Following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be having...
This is a Look and See audio production, where entertainment is always free.
Time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
And now we have a Sci-Fi Thursday for you on top of the cereals we have. Hope you enjoy.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape to a gigantic rocket ship, about to be shocked into space on man's first voyage to Mars. As Ray Bradbury tells it in his famous science fiction story, Mars is heaven.
The project is magnificent, overwhelming, and tremendous. We return you now to the scene of the takeoff in the desert of New Mexico. Go ahead, New Mexico.
Thank you, London. This is Stuart Novins back in New Mexico. I'm standing here on the great steel observation platform overlooking the takeoff stand. As the moment for departure draws nearer, the whole area has been flooded with artificial light. It bathes a spaceship in a kind of silver luminescence, and surrounding it, engulfing it, this subdued hysteria of hundreds of thousands of people come to see the start of this incredible voyage of 18 men in the rocket ship, the Venture. It's standing there, pointing upward, pointing toward the heavens, and in a few minutes it will bloom out into great flowers of heat and color, shocked into space on man's first voyage to Mars. As you know, ladies and gentlemen, prayers are being said for these 18 men and their ship, the first men, the first ship to dare the voyage to another planet. Prayers are being said by every creed in mosques and churches and synagogues the world over. We take you now to the Basilica of St. Paul's in Rome. This is New Mexico again. We're sorry to cut in, but that roar you're hearing, the roar of the crowd, it's the moment we've been waiting for. I can see the crew of the Venture walking up the catwalk that leads to the spaceship. The men are entering, and now the escape hatch is closed. Now the men are in the ship. This silence, this great, awful silence of the crowd, it's the voiceless prayer that's in every heart. They're about ready now. Some lights from the ship just blinked on and off. It's a signal. In just a few seconds, a few more, stand by. Stand by. They're gone. The Venture. It's out of sight.
Log entry, U.S. rocket ship Venture. 1 hour out from Earth, destination Mars. Past Keneally Heaviside layer without incident. Rate of speed, 450,000 miles per hour. With planet Mars at its closest point to Earth, 35 million miles, calculate duration of voyage to be roughly 3.5 days. Captain John Black, Master. Log entry, U.S. rocket ship, The Venture, 12 hours out from Earth. While navigating supertensioned atmospheric forces, port shield generator broke down. Replaced by boosted. Yes?
Lieutenant Lustig reporting, sir.
Come in, Pete.
Have the report on the trajectory, sir?
Put it on my desk. Pete?
Yes, sir.
How do you feel?
Feel? Why, just wonderful, sir. Sitting up there in the observation turret, I don't know just how to say it. The sights, I mean. Moon so close and Earth looking like... And Mars, sir. Sir? Do you really think we'll make it?
Who is it?
Dr. Hankson, Captain. May I come in?
Sure, Sam.
You weren't asleep, were you, John?
No, Sam. Just sitting here thinking.
Well, don't think about it too much. Sleep instead. You need all the sleep you can get.
Who sleeps? Who sleeps and has no way of knowing what's waiting for him? Look at it through the porthole, Sam. Mars. How would you describe it, that glittering blob of red?
That's good enough.
Will it consume us? Spew out dust out into space? Maybe it's the Elysian Fields, all charm and sweetness and moonlight shining on the restless dead. Which will it be, Sam?
I don't know. All I know is that they told me I was an expert in space medicine. At Randolph Field on a plot of ground called Texas, they told me that. That's all I know.
What are you doing up? You're supposed to be in a sack.
Well, I'll tell you, Captain. Sometimes a man can't sleep. That happens to me sometimes. So I just wander through the ship, check on the boys, see that they're tucked in properly.
That's what you were doing with me, huh?
No.
What made them do it, Sam? What made them volunteer?
Man keeps looking for something. There are no new frontiers now, only new worlds. And there'll always be men who want to conquer them.
Log entry, U.S. rocket ship Venture. 78 hours out from Earth. Approaching gravitational field of Mars. Atmospheric conditions similar to Earth's. Log entry, U.S. rocket ship Venture. 79 hours out from Earth. Have this moment landed on Mars at 1700 hours. We made it. Chemical analysis indicated on ship's instrument shows air to be breathable and will sustain human life. Gravity comparable with that of Earth's.
Ready, John?
Yes. How are the men in sick bay, Sam?
Happy. They're all right, John. You ready?
First one thing. Captain to crew, your attention. We have landed on Mars. No man is to leave this ship under penalty of court-martial. Dr. Hingston and I will make a brief reconnaissance. Crew will proceed with repair of ship's hull. As you know, our ship is armed against any possible aggression. I can't impress it upon you too strongly. No man will leave this ship until Dr. Hingston and I ascertain that we are not in a hostile world. That is all. Let's go, Sam.
You first, Captain. It's your honor. You, the first man from Earth to walk on Mars.
This grass. It's a well-kept lawn.
John, look over there. A house. A Victorian house. Colored glass and scrolls and everything.
I don't believe it. Come on. Sam, look at these. Two iron deer on this lawn. We had a pair of these when I was a kid. Sam, you hear that? That piano from that house. Sam, this isn't Mars. It can't be. It just can't be.
It can't be, John, but it is. Welcome to Mars.
For Perhaps you know that skilled research scientists have worked for many years to develop new high-octane components for gasoline. Components to give your car higher Antinoch performance and greater power. But do you know that from this research has come xylene? Xylene, one of the highest octane components in gasoline history. Now, listen. Today, every gallon of the famous Richfield gasoline contains xylene. Xylene in Richfield gasoline helps give your car new, lively pickup, new high Antinoch power, and new gasoline economy. Furthermore, there are two great Richfield gasolines with xylene. That means you can select the right Richfield gasoline to give your particular car the finest performance at lowest cost per mile. Richfield high-octane gasoline at regular price is specially refined for the average motor. Richfield Ethyl, ethyl at its best, meets the requirements of the newest motors at the highest compression. And remember, both Richfield gasolines contain xylene. Stop where you see the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pumps. Get famous Richfield gasoline with xylene. And now we return you to Escape.
What did I say, Sam? Somewhere back there in space? That Mars was the Elysian Fields, all sweetness and charm.
No, John, it isn't that. It's what you see. A world like ours on Earth.
And this?
A small town with good air in it. A small town like the one I was born in. Same smell of flowers, same sounds.
You think that the civilizations of two planets can progress at the same rate, develop in the same way?
I do now.
Well, I don't. Well, look at that house. A Victorian house on Mars? You expect me to believe that? A house with lace curtain windows, with port swings, with something that sounds like a piano and probably is a piano, playing beautiful Ohio. You believe all that?
I believe it. I admit it's strange, but I believe it.
Strange nuts. It's impossible. We're going back to the ship.
Wait, John. It could be. It could be that there are similar patterns of thought, movement, civilization on every planet in our system. Maybe we're on the threshold of the great psychological and metaphysical discovery of our time. Maybe we...
Well, go on, Sam.
Maybe this proves the existence of God.
Not everyone needs proof.
I don't. But how else can you explain all this? John, it fills me with terror and joy. I don't know whether to laugh or cry.
I admit it looks peaceful and cool. Pretty much like Council Bluffs, where I was born. That was a good, quiet place, Council Bluffs, Iowa.
Do you see that, Sam? Do you hear it?
I see it and hear it. It's there. A horse and carriage going down the street.
Suppose that by accident or something, we landed on a planet in space in another time. Suppose that this is Earth, 30 or 50 years ago. Maybe we got lost in the dimensions. What do you think, Sam?
So much like my hometown. That house. That room up there with the beaded lamp near the window. When I was a kid, I used to sleep and do my lessons in a room just like that. I'd lie there in the night, and I'd be awake, and I could hear the freight trains across the river, and... John, do you hear that?
I hear it. Let's go.
Where?
We're going up to that house and ask questions. Where else? Come on.
Yes, can I help you?
I beg your pardon, but we want...
If you're selling something, I'm much too busy and I haven't time. We're all at supper.
Oh, wait, don't go. What town is this?
What do you mean, what town is this? How could you be in a town and not know what town it was?
Oh, I beg your pardon, but we're strangers here. We're from Earth, and we want to know... How this town got here? How you got here?
Are you census taker?
No.
What do you want, then?
How long has this town been here?
It was built in 1868. Is this a game?
Oh, no, not a game. Try to understand. We're from Earth.
From where?
From Earth.
Where's that?
The Earth? What?
Out of the ground, you mean?
Oh, no, from the planet Earth. Come out on the porch, please, and I'll show you.
No, I won't come out there. You're evidently quite mad from the sun.
Let me try, John. Lady, we came in a flying ship.
across space among the stars. We came from the third planet from the sun, Earth, to this planet, which is Mars. Now, do you understand?
You're touched from the sun, too. Go away now before I call my husband from his supper. He'll beat you up, that's what he'll do.
But this is Mars, isn't it?
This is Green Lake, Ohio, on the continent of America, surrounded by the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans on a place called the World, or sometimes the Earth. Go away now, go away!
Let's take a walk, Sam.
Yeah.
Sam?
Yeah?
There's something going on here. Something we don't understand. I want you to go back to the ship. If anything out of the way happens, lift the ship and get out.
But, John...
That's an order, Sam.
All right, if it's an order. John, look. Look at that woman walking toward us.
What about her?
Well, she looks like...
Sam! Oh, Sam, you look fine, so grown up. Sam, don't you know me? It's your grandma, your old grandma.
Grandmother?
What's wrong, Sam? This is a happy meeting. And who is this friend of yours?
This is Captain John Black. John, this is my grandmother.
Grandmother?
So help me. So help me, John, this is my grandmother. She's dead. Died 30 years ago. But this is my grandmother.
Well, there's no sense standing here on the street. You just come along to my house. We've so much to talk about. You too, Captain. And a friend of my grandson's is mine, too. Now, don't stand there with your mouths open. Come on! Here, Sam, have some more iced tea. Would you like some more, too, Captain?
Oh, thank you. I would.
Well, here's to our health.
Health? How long have you been here, Grandmother?
Ever since I died.
What?
Don't look like that. I said ever since I died, 30 years ago.
Sam.
Who are we to question what happens? What's living, anyway? All I know is I'm alive again and no questions asked. Here, Captain, feel. Go ahead, feel my arm. Solid, isn't it? You hear my voice, don't you? You hear it, don't you, Captain?
Yes, yes, I hear it.
Grandmother...
Well, then why go around questioning?
Well, it's just that we... I never thought I'd see you again, Grandmother.
Mrs. Hingston...
Yes, some more iced tea, Captain.
Oh, no, no. I just want to ask you a question. Mrs. Hingston, is Mars heaven?
Nonsense. No. It's a world, and we get a second chance. It's like another Earth. How do we know there wasn't one before Earth?
That's a good question, John.
Well, maybe we better get back to the ship, Sam. It's been nice, Mrs. Hingston. Thanks for the drink.
You'll be back, of course. For supper, I mean. We're having fried chicken
and
mashed potatoes.
Wait a minute. What's that? Excuse me, Mrs. Hingston.
Sam? Sam, come here.
Hey, well, what do you know, John? A parade. With a brass band.
But the crew, my crew marching behind the band with all those people.
But they're heroes. These people are welcome as heroes.
The abandoned ship. They had orders. I'll court-martial every one of them.
Oh, John, listen to me. They found all relatives and friends just like I have.
They have their orders.
What would you have done?
Obeyed orders. I...
What's the matter?
Sam. Sam, I don't believe it. It's impossible.
John, they said I would find you here.
Phyllis.
Of course, darling.
Phyllis.
Of course. Who did you think it was?
This is Phyllis, Sam. My 10 years ago. After that, I never got married.
We're waiting for you. Your mother and father.
They're alive?
Waiting for you. At your old house. On Maple Avenue.
You heard that, Sam, didn't you? This is Phyllis talking. And she said Mother and Dad and the house...
You understand it now. The crew. Same thing has happened to them.
Yes. Yes. When I open my eyes, it'll all be gone. Phyllis will be gone.
Open them, John.
Phyllis. Phyllis.
Oh, my darling. My darling.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to see you children dancing together again. Your mother would have enjoyed it so much, John.
I must have worn her out with all my questions.
Don't worry about it, son. She'll get a good rest tonight. Then in the morning, the days after, we have so much time now, son. We'll all be together. You and Phyllis, your mother and I. So much time.
Yes, yes.
Don't go away from me, John. Hold me closer. I've dreamed so long of dancing with you.
But I...
No. No more questions. Just accept it. That your mother and father were once dead and are now alive. That I was killed. 10 years ago, I was killed in a horrible accident. And now... Now I'm alive. And in your arms. Oh, tight, John. Hold me tight.
Well, I think I'll run along to bed now. You children won't forget to turn out the lights. Well, you know what to do. Good night, Phyllis.
Good night, Father Black.
Good night, son.
Good night, Dad.
Shall we go out on the back porch, John? Like we used to long ago. Come with me, John. Here. Let's sit here on the steps. Remember that grape arbor? You built it. Oh, I remember you hit your thumb with a hammer, and I cried. You're very silent, John. Is anything wrong?
Phyllis, I've just had a crazy notion. Suppose this were Mars.
But it isn't.
Humor me, Phyllis. Suppose it were Mars, and the Martians saw our ship coming and saw us inside our ship and hated us, and they wanted to destroy us, but in a very clever way.
Yes.
Well, what would be the best weapon a Martian could use against us with our atomic bombs, our hydrogen...
John...
No, let me finish. The hypothesis is interesting. The Martians would use telepathy, hypnosis, memory, imagination.
Oh, John, don't question us anymore. No more.
Look, suppose this town is some other shape, a Martian shape. But by playing on my memory and my desires and my wants, they've made it what I've wanted it to be.
Yes.
I suppose my mother and father weren't that at all. But two Martians, incredibly brilliant, keeping me under this dreaming hypnosis as other Martians have done it to my men, to Sam.
But me, you've had your arms around me. You've kissed me. We shared old secrets. Was that a Martian hypnosis, John?
Phyllis.
Yes, what is it, John? Where are you going?
I've got to talk to Sam. I've got to find out what he thinks now that... He's alone with his grandmother.
Stay here with me, John.
Well, I've got to talk to Sam. Maybe he's beginning to wonder, too.
You're not going anywhere, John.
Phyllis!
Hey, Phyllis, no! You're not Phyllis! I was right! You're not... You're not...
Friends, friends, comrades, fellow Martians, this is a great day for Mars, a day of great rejoicing. As number one of Quadrant 327B of Sector Q, it is my proud privilege to read to you this message from the Planetary All High. It says, congratulations on your splendid work in meeting the barbarian invaders and atomizing them. You have proven the complete efficiency of Plan A, and hereafter, mass hypnosis will become standard operating procedure in repelling any further invasion from outer space, be they sub-Martian, from Earth, or any other creature from any other planet. Well done! I can add little to this unstinted praise from the All High. but I would like to point out to you that what you have accomplished could not have been done had it not been for our space heroes, who have risked so much and often given all in recent years to keep the planet Earth under close surveillance. This surveillance, as you know, has been accomplished by our space patrols, known to Earthmen as flying saucers. Ah, they were courageous, these Earth creatures, to brave space in that crude ship. But they were inferior beings, and therefore they had to be atomized. Their extinction was necessary to ensure our way of life. Yet perhaps, since this has been your first encounter with creatures from outer space, you whose glorious victory this has been, may want to say something. Is there anyone who wants to say something? You?
Well, yes. It was a very interesting experience. He said his name was John Black. He was a nice young being. Nice. He thought I was his father, whatever that is. I guess that's all I want to say.
And you?
No, I don't think so. Well, I thought of something, but I forgot.
I see. And you?
One of them asked me if Mars was heaven. What's heaven?
I don't know. Now for the business at hand. The ship they came in. The destruction of it. Disintegrator squad.
Ready.
Proceed.
Compress charge. 16 atmospheres.
Charges compressed.
Low velocity. Trajectory 2.
Low velocity. Trajectory 2.
Release. Charge!
The ship they came in, it's gone.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight has presented Mars is Heaven by Ray Bradbury, adapted for radio by Martin Fine and David Friedkin. Featured in the cast were Jeff Corey as Captain Black, Florence Bates as the grandmother, Bill Johnstone as Dr. Hinkston, Walter Catlett as Number One of Mars, Elizabeth Root as Phyllis, Paul Fries as Peter Lustig, Ian Wolfe as the father, and Stuart Novins, who played himself. Also heard were Ruth Parrott and Ben Wright. Special music arranged and played by Ivan Dittmars.
You, finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you escape.
Today, Escape brings you one of the most unusual and terrifying stories of recent years. It is a story of such scope that the producers of Escape, in order to dramatize its full impact, will present it in 2 episodes. So now, with the performance of John Daner as Isherwood Williams, we bring you part 1 of George Stewart's powerful novel, Earth Abides. If a killing type of virus strain should suddenly arise by mutation, it could, because of the rapid transportation in which we indulge nowadays, be carried to the far corners of the earth and cause the death of millions of people.
If you should awake some morning, tomorrow morning, let's say, if you should wake to a man-dead world, where virtually all of human life had been dissolved from the face of the earth, leaving behind only buildings, bridges, machines, if you should awake to such a world tomorrow morning, what would you do? Where would you go? My name is Isherwood Williams. I was a student of ecology. I was in the Northern California wilderness gathering specimens of rock, plant, and animal life. I was alone, and had been for a month. Climbing up to a sharp ledge one day, I felt a sudden sharp pain in my extended right hand. I withdrew it under reflex and looked up, and there, a foot above my head, I saw him, a rattler, coiled, ready to strike again. Slowly, carefully, I lowered myself and began to suck the poison from the bite. I wrapped a handkerchief about my wrist, tourniquet style, and headed for my cabin. There, I broke open my snake bite outfit, cut a neat crisscross in my hand at the point of the wound, and applied the rubber suction pump. Then I lay down on my cot. I felt sick. Sick because of the poison. Sick because I was alone. I was weak. In a few moments, deep, warm blackness closed in about me. I don't know how long I was unconscious, but I was awakened by the door.
Harry? Harry, look here. This one's still alive, I think.
Hello. I'm glad you came. I'm sick.
He's still alive, all right. Don't go near him. Come on, let's get out of here.
No, wait. I'm sick. Come back. Why? Why did they leave me when they knew I was sick? What were they afraid of? I tried to stand. My knees were like sponge rubber. But finally, I was able to stumble to my chest of drawers. And then I saw the hammer, my rock hammer, resting on the top of the chest. And it suddenly became the most important thing in the world to me. If I can lift this hammer, I told myself, I will live. I wrapped my fingers about its handle, and I lifted it slowly, then let it down. I breathed a sigh of relief. I would live. In the morning, I felt better. I got up, packed the car, and headed for the nearest town, Hudsonville, about 10 miles to the south. They'd take care of me in Hudsonville.
Consider, if you will, the case of the rats that once inhabited Christmas Island, a small bit of tropical verdure some 200 miles south of Java. In 1903, a new disease sprang up. The rats proved universally susceptible and soon were dying by the thousands. In spite of great numbers, in spite of an abundant supply of food, in spite of a rapid breeding rate, the species is now extinct.
Hudsonville. The familiar houses, stores, taverns, but no one on the streets. A hen scratched quietly in the dust. A lonely dog was howling somewhere. I got out of the car and walked into a little restaurant. The place was empty. Hey. Is anybody here? Hey! Silence. Deathly silence. On the counter, I saw a newspaper. Flipped it open. The headline...
Crisis. Acute.
I read the story, a dispatch from Washington.
The federal government is herewith suspended, as of the emergency. All officers, including those of the armed forces, will put themselves under the orders of any functioning local authority, by order of the acting president.
Front page, column 3.
The West Oakland Hospitalization Center has been abandoned. Its functions, including burials at sea, are now concentrated at the Berkeley Center. Keep tuned to your radio.
The radio. The radio in my car. I turned the dial to the most powerful station in the vicinity. Static. Nothing but static. Desperately, I twisted it from one end of the band to the other, praying for a human voice, a bar of music, anything. There wasn't a single radio station still in operation. The horn. Someone will hear the horn. Silence and death. I leaned back in the seat, exhausted. I sat that way for minutes before I looked at the paper again. The paper. The last sign of human life left to me. It was dated a week before. I read it through twice. Whole cities had perished. Medical centers, bodies. Doctors, nurses, burial crews hard at work, and then they too had fallen and died. The United States, the world, a stagnant flesh pool of death. Suddenly, with terror, I thought of home. I started for San Francisco. On the way, I helped myself to a tank full of gas at a station. Oddly enough, the pumps were still working. Electricity still flowed from the river-driven generators, and the lights still blazed. I wondered how I had survived. Perhaps the snake venom had counteracted the virus. Perhaps the clean wilderness, who could save? But somewhere, someone else was alive. The men at the cabin door, there must be others, but where? I passed some cows in a pasture. Smiled to myself at the irony. The world belonged once again to the animals.
Ecological observation. Pedigree means nothing now. The prize, which is life itself, will go to the keenest brain, the staunchest limb, the strongest jaw. The champion boars will die in their well-kept pens, but the shotes will roam wild. In a few generations, their legs will grow slim, their bodies thin, their tusks longer. Man, they need nothing from man.
I passed four or five cars on the highway, abandoned. But farther along, I spotted another car, and there was a man inside. I stopped and got out. He had fallen over the wheel, and there was a bottle beside him and the strong smell of cheap liquor. I shook him. Come on, come on. Come on, wake up. Uh-huh. Wake up, wake up.
Oh,
wake up, I said.
Hey,
come on,
listen,
now, come on.
Now, leave me alone. Now, you just leave me alone.
I said, wake up.
Hey.
What's your name? Your name.
Oh, what difference does it make?
Now, come on, come on. Don't go back to sleep. What's your name?
Violet. Barlow's my name. 58 Barlow's in the Seattle telephone directory, and I'm the only one left. Me, the dirtiest skunk of the lot. What am I doing alive? Answer me that.
Go back to sleep, Mr. Barlow.
Wait, 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 wait. Here, here, here. It's free on a house. Everything's on a house now. Have a drink.
No, thanks.
Let me tell you why I'm still alive. Because I'm being punished. I'm not good enough to die.
Oh, goodbye, Mr. Barlow.
Hey, come on back. I'll buy you a drink. Good. I'll buy you a drink. Look here, I got $500. I took it from a bank yesterday. You want it here? $500.
San Francisco, the mute, dead city of San Francisco, a naked forest of concrete with its empty streets, its ghosts of newspapers blowing across alleys. I crossed the Bay Bridge, stretched over the blank water. A single car, coupe, parked in an emergency recess, was its sole possessor now.
The Bay Bridge.
A final monument to the greatness that had been mankind. I drove the familiar route toward home. Turned right at San Lupo Drive, pulled up in front of the house. I walked up the stairs, took out my key, opened the door. A strange odor of must and stale food blew out at me. Mom? Dad? Mom! I fell into a chair and cried.
Observation. The desert and the wilderness began a long time ago. Men came only in the latter centuries. They camped at the springs and wore faint trails through the mesquite bushes. They laid rails, strung wire, paved long, straight roads. After a while, men were gone, leaving their small works behind them. In 1,000 years, at a conservative estimate, man will be a forgotten stone in the jungle.
Where would I go? I had no idea. I only knew I had to keep going. Change of place was my only comfort now, the only way I had of convincing myself that there was still life in the world. The snake bite began to hurt again, but I felt good, some small sign of living flesh. I left San Francisco and started across what had once been the United States, Route 66, through the giant Southwest. The towns, the empty, dead towns, the dust-blown, silent towns passed me by, one after another. Kingman, Flagstaff, Albuquerque, Oklahoma City. Just outside Guthrie, I saw a Negro tending his garden as if nothing had happened. He was afraid. He waved me on with a shotgun. In Tulsa, the sprinklers were still going in the park. I stopped. In Fayetteville, Arkansas, I heard music. Came from a little bar, neon lit, spitting its bright invitation to the empty street. I took my hammer and went inside. The bottles were stacked neatly, bar rag over the rack, and a broken jukebox, blazing in blues and reds, singing its song to the vacant varnished tables.
And you just want to jump up and down.
Shut up.
Like a carnival.
Shut up.
It's love.
Shut up.
There's a sparkle.
Shut up.
Me.
Shut up. Shut up. Wait, shut up.
You're well grounded, you know, but you're soaring to air. Oh, but it's good.
I slept in the best auto courts of the most luxurious hotels. I slept and ate from the leavings of 150 million people. All the wealth of America had been bequeathed to me. All its wealth and its death. 3 days later, I pulled up the Pulaski Skyway, crossed George Washington Bridge, came to Manhattan. The splendid, slow-decaying corpse of Fifth Avenue, the sable mink in the windows, the silly traffic lights changing color at naked intersections. Manhattan, soulless and dead.
Stretched out between its rivers, the city will remain for a long time. Stone and brick, concrete and asphalt, glass. Time deals gently with them. A windowpane loosens, vibrates, breaks in a gusty wind. Lightning strikes, loosens the tiles of a cornice. The shade trees on the avenues die in their shallow pockets. Bats fly from the 59th floor. City dies slowly.
In the afternoon, I saw smoke from a chimney in the Bronx. I drove to the house, a small house, and knocked on the door. I heard footsteps. When the door opened, I saw a little, bald man with a broad smile, holding a handful of playing cards.
Milt Carson, how do you do? Come on in. You're in time for supper.
Well, thanks. I just ate.
This is Mrs. Carson.
How are you?
Won't you sit down?
Thanks.
Where are you from?
California.
I had a relative there.
We're just finishing a hand of gin. Say, look here. Isn't that a beauty?
Oh, the television set, yes. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's a combination radio, television set, radio player. I'll bet it even does the washing. It took us 2 days to get it up the steps from the radio store.
I always wanted a set like that.
Yes, but there's nothing on the air.
Sir, always wanted a set like that. Jen, there you are.
I owe you $10,000.
Well, give it to me tomorrow. There's a busted window at the Chase National. All the money you want. I carry $50,000 with me all the time just to be on the safe side.
Of course, you can't buy anything with it now, but it sure feels nice to carry around.
How about some salami?
No, thanks. I just ate.
Oh, yeah. Say, do you like canasta?
Not much at cards.
Oh, canasta, I can teach you. It's simple, like rummy, but a little different. What I was wondering was, why don't you stay here? It got everything you'd want right here in the Bronx. Need a coat for the lady, break a window at I.J. Fox. You should see some of the diamonds I got Mrs. Carson at Tiffany's yesterday. Beauties. Hey, where are you going?
I've got to get started.
Well, where? There ain't no place to go.
Lots of luck.
Well, thanks, but I wish you could stay with us.
No, thanks. Goodbye. Oh, the scavengers. How long would they last? Through the winter? And it was doubtful. There'd be no central heating. Even breaking furniture in the fireplace wouldn't keep them alive. They were like highly bred spaniels or Pekingese who walked the city's streets at the end of their leashes. They would die with the city a season or two later, pneumonia, accident. The Negro in Oklahoma with his heart to the land, he would survive. Milt Carson and his new wife, they were waiting for death at the card table. Two weeks later, I was in San Francisco again. The streets were just as bare as when I left. The lights were still on, but dimmer now. Water flowed still from the faucets. But San Francisco had a new population, the dogs. They hunted in packs, all breeds bound together in the common search for food. Danes, Dalmatians, Scotties, toys, all of them. The dogs had taken over the city. And I decided to move back into the house because of the familiar things. Late one afternoon, I went out to look around the neighborhood, and I heard the yelping too late. As I looked around me, I saw myself being surrounded by dogs. They were hungry, ravenously hungry, and they started to close in. The car was on the street some 50 feet away, if I could make the car. Bulldog made a lunge for me. I kicked violently and started to run. They were after me, some of them running at my legs. He reached the car, opened the door, and slammed it. They climbed to the window, baring their fangs, their red tongues, wet with hunger. But I was safe. Then the night. And that night, the lights went out. The lights. The lights. Hey, the lights. What happened to the lights? I looked out over the city. It was black. Black as death. The age of electricity was over. Finished. And there were candles. Mom kept them for ceremonial occasions in the buffet, and I found myself hoarding matches and flashlights, candles, piling them up in the corners. There was only night and day. Time had lost its meaning. I had food and clothing. And then I had books to read. The Bible. And I read the Bible.
Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine.
There was a faint but unmistakable light burning that night a mile away on Knob Hill. I got into the car and drove to the light. I parked the car. I reached for my hammer. In the window, a shadow moved. As I approached the door, a flashlight caught me in its glare. I stopped, dead still. I waited for someone to say, "Put your hands up," or, "Who are you?" There was a breath of perfume.
That's a nice car.
I can pick up a better one on any street corner.
Come on in.
Thanks.
How about some coffee?
Sounds good.
How come you didn't find me before this?
Well, I just saw the light tonight. I decided to investigate.
I saw your light lots of times.
Oh?
You live down on San Lupo Drive.
Well, why didn't you come in?
Woman's pride. Man's supposed to come after the woman.
Uh-huh. That was before. There are no rules now.
No, but they're habits. Won't you use black?
Yeah, black's fine, fine.
I don't want you to think you're the first one I've met. There were five or six others. They saw the light and they came in. They had coffee and I sent them on.
What about me?
I don't know you.
Well, I'm clean, well-educated, healthy, young.
Those are the good things.
I dislike turnips, canned beans, stupid people.
What's your name?
You'll laugh.
I would laugh. What's your name?
Isherwood, my mother's maiden name. Everybody calls me Ish.
Well, mine's Emma. Emma and Ish. Nobody's going to write any love songs with that combination.
No. Don't imagine they will.
I like you. Coffee will be ready in a minute.
Emma. Will you come and live with me?
I don't know you.
What is there to know? That I like you, you like me. We're both alone. Emma.
What?
Emma. Good.
Ceremony. It ought to be some kind of ceremony.
Have you a Bible?
Bible? On the mantel. I've never used it. I just had it. Here.
Give me your hand. Now, we shall be together always. Emma was warm and understanding, good woman, a healthy woman. Soon there was a baby to be born. I had read some books, but I couldn't read enough. I stood by her during the night and tried to help. When the morning came, we had a son, the firstborn since the great disaster. Then there was the matter of time.
We won't need to know the exact hour.
No, that's true. The clocks have stopped, but what's the difference? We eat when we're hungry, and when we're tired, we go to bed.
But the months and the years. It's important to know when the year ends.
Well, that's what I've been doing out on the porch.
What is that thing out there?
Well, it's a transit. I set it towards the sun, and when the sun reaches the winter solstice, I know that to be the shortest day of the year. And that will be our new year.
New Year's Day isn't the shortest day of the year.
No, December 21st is. And we'll make that our new year. Anne's always been trying to get close to that date for the new year, but calendar makers always went off.
How long will it be?
A few days.
And then it'll be 1950 what?
No. That was the old calendar. This will be our year one.
The year one. We must call it something. I know. We'll call it the year of the baby.
The new life began around the simple problems of Emma, myself, and the baby. The day came when the sun reversed its path. I took my hammer and a chisel. Emma and I had found a tall, smooth rock in what had once been a small public park. In the rock, I carved the figure one. The new beginning, I said to her. The rebirth of man. In the year two, the rats came. San Francisco was overrun with them. They had broken into most of the grocery stores, torn open the cartons, gorged themselves, and gave birth to more rats. They multiplied by the hundreds and then the thousands. Rats, the carriers of deadly bubonic plague.
Come quick, they're getting in.
Where?
Here. It's shoot through the door.
Well, get me that kitchen chair. Hurry now, hurry.
Here. They're going
baby!
Now hold the chair against the opening. I'll nail it later.
The baby! The baby!
I rushed into the bedroom, taking my hammer with me. There were two of them, tremendous rats. I stationed myself at the crib. One came toward me, unafraid, for the fear of man had been bred out of them. And I flung the hammer at him. Ah, I'd missed. The rat leaped up into the crib. I threw a blanket over him and flung him to death on the floor. Then I picked up the hammer and threw it at the other one. Dead. Dead. But that was just two of them. Outside, I could hear hundreds squealing, their tiny feet scratching at the walls. How long would it be before they destroyed us? Man was gone now. This was the age of the rats.
Escape is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. You have just heard part one of Earth Abides by George Stewart, specially adapted for Escape by David Ellis. John Daner was starred as Ish, with Larry Dobkin as Dr. Stanley, and Peggy Weber as M. Featured in the cast were Michael Ann Barrett, Parley Bear, Ron Brogan, Paul Fries, and Lou Krugman. The special music for Escape was arranged and played by Ivan Dittmars. Next week, Escape will bring you the second half of Earth Abides, truly one of the most gripping and terrifying novels of recent years.
Because he was back aft alone. He sat quietly relaxed. He wasn't bored. It was just that he had no interest. After 14 years in the mapping command, even the strangest of the new worlds was routine to him. What little imagination he had was beginning to center upon a small farm he'd seen on the southern plains of Vega 5. The brightness that Wisher didn't see grew with the passing moments. A pale young man named Grenville, who was Wisher's crewman, watched it for a long while, absently. When the gleam took on brilliance and a blue-white dazzling blaze, Grenville was startled. He stared at the screen for a long moment, then carefully checked the distance. Still a few light minutes away, the planet was already uncommonly bright. The blueness and the brightness flowed in together. It was the most beautiful thing Grenville had ever seen.
SF-68. Biotex, the new soak and pre-wash powder, brings you SF-68. Stories which plunge vividly into other worlds, other dimensions, other times. SF-68. Grenville's Planet, adapted for radio and produced by Michael McCabe. Grenville's Planet. Grenville watched the planet grow. Slowly the moons came out. Four winked on and ringed the bright world like
pearls in a great necklace. The glare's incredible. Sam, come down here, quickly. I know what that blue is. I know what it is. Shining. It's all shining. Everything's blue and shining. Sam, will you come down, man? Hurry. Look at the screen. Clouds. Look at the clouds. Sam, look. Isn't it beautiful? See? Phew. Well, I'll be. It's blue. The entire world's blue. Ice caps. Clouds are white. But the rest's entirely blue. It's all water. A world of water. How's that for a freak, huh? One in a million, right? I bet you never saw anything like that.
Hang on. I'll make a check.
There's no land. A world of water. I suppose it was bound to happen sooner or later. But nobody else in mapping command. No one's found a world of water till now.
I'm circling. We're moving to the dark side of the planet in 12 seconds. Watch carefully.
Bound to happen, though, wasn't it? Considering Earth, which is a land area covering only 1/4, and when you consider the odds, chances are that there are quite a number of planets with scarcely any land area at all.
Let's go down.
Down? Down where?
Down low. I want to see what's living in that ocean.
The man who always follows the regulations without question.
I do, normally. Without the regs, nothing commands, death trap. Nowhere in space is the need for rules as great as out here on the frontier. We owe our lives to the regs.
Then I wonder how they'd feel about us probing the water of an all-water planet from 1,000 feet up.
Inevitably, there are some things the regs can't foresee. All planets are new, but this one's newer than all the rest. Extra different. It's all water. Nothing. Not at all. No fish. No seaweed. 800 feet, that's as near as we're going.
Evolution's been confined underwater, then? Completely underwater?
If there is evolution. If...
Look! Sam, see? An island.
Yes, I see it.
They didn't see the second island. Radar picked it up for them. They patrolled the dark side of the planet, but found no more islands.
This planet's my assignment. They might even name it after me. There are a load of planets named after men in mapping command. When the tourists come, they'll be coming to Grenville Planet, one of the most spectacular wonders of the universe.
We'll land.
Hello.
peculiar. What is? I don't know. Doesn't feel right.
There was nothing on the island that could hurt them. They were quite sure of that. The check had revealed the presence of a great number of small, four-footed animals. But only one type was larger than the dog, and that one was slow and noisy. Both men were standing close in by the ship. It was a rule. You never left the ship area until you were sure. The regulations said so.
Have to be careful about snakes. How's the etching? I'm just reading the meter. It's good. Okay, let's breathe this world.
Good. It is good. Queer sand. Red. Red and warm.
You can't call the vegetation jungle. Everything's too stiff. Unreal, sort of. Nothing over 10 feet. Everything's sort of...
regular. Yeah. I noticed.
And so they explored. Wisher began to feel more confident. They had their rifles. They had the ship and the alarm system. There was nothing that could harm them. The day passed. Just before twilight, two of the moons came out.
Moons?
What?
I was just thinking.
What about the moons?
I wasn't thinking about them exactly. I was thinking about the tide. Four good-sized moons in conjunction could raise one heck of a tide.
So?
That's probably where the land went.
I'll let the technicians worry about all that.
No, it's just that these islands have no right to be here at all. Four moons. They could produce tides that would wash continents away. Or maybe the tides are far apart, centuries apart. Huh? Evolution. A billion years underneath the sea, with no land to take the first developing mammals. I wonder what's going on this minute underneath all that water.
When they went into the ship for the night, Wisher didn't need the regulations to tell him to seal the airlock and set the alarm screens. It was only an animal. One of the large ones. A weird, bristling thing with a lean, powerful body. By the time morning came, Wisher, who'd been frightened half to death, was in favor of leaving for the one remaining star they would map before returning to base. Grenville was secretly keen to return as well, but for different reasons. Grenville had decided that Grenville was now a famous man.
That island, over there, that's North Grenville. This one, South Grenville.
Don't go near the water.
All right, Mummy. I'll work the edge of the vegetation. Funny. No birds.
Leave the rifle, take the pistol, use it.
Okay.
No shellfish. The beach is a bare, dead plot of ground. There's danger here. I know it. But I can't explain it. Sea, noiseless. No tide, no waves, nothing. It's because there's nothing, just stillness everywhere, that I know there's danger. The seas of every world I've ever been to have been choked with life. From Earth on, out to Deneb. Anyway, I'll take a specimen of the water.
It took a lot of courage for Wisher to approach those waves. He took a quick water sample and hurried back to the ship. The water was bath water, so far as his instruments could tell. There was nothing wrong with it. There was nothing much living in it either. Then Grenville came back with his specimen sack.
No shellfish.
Why?
Well, maybe they just don't like it here.
The computer's finished constructing the orbits of those moons.
So?
So, the moons conjunct every 112 years. They rise at a tide of 600 feet.
Well, I don't see what...
The tide is at least 400 feet higher than either of the islands.
Oh.
Where in the name of... Grenville, where did the animals come from?
They should be drowned.
Right. And would be. Unless they're amphibian, they're not. Or unless a new batch evolves every 100 years.
It doesn't make sense.
Sand, it seems artificial. Why is the island here at all?
And then the idea popped unbidden into his brain. And he slowly turned and looked at Grenville, who was staring moodily out to sea.
That's it. That has to be the reason. The whole island is artificial. It's restored. Put here by whatever, whoever lives under the sea. Can't leave yet. We haven't any proof. Besides, there hasn't been any manifestation of danger.
We've got enough proof for me.
It's easy to understand, isn't it? Evolution kept on going, changing, like it's done everywhere else in the universe. Only here, where the mammals began coming up onto the land, they had no room to expand.
Mm.
They were being washed away all the time. Every 100 years, the continents were worn down below sea level. But evolution never stopped. It continued underneath the sea. Eventually came up with an intelligent race. Heaven knows what they are or how far they've progressed. They must be pretty highly evolved. They couldn't have done something like this.
There's no way of telling. The Egyptians built a pyramid. Tougher job than this. You can't tell from the islands how far advanced they are. Zoo?
What?
Zoo. Things under the sea, perhaps.
Now, if they wanted a zoo, they'd build one under the sea, surely. Where they are, where they live, not up here. They'd have their zoo out underneath the water, where they could travel with ease, with animals in airtight compartments or something.
If there is anything living under the sea.
Gren, there's got to be. Otherwise, how do you explain this? The island, the other one, too.
I don't know. And another thing. If there is something, why hasn't it come here? Why haven't they come to see us? They must have noticed our ship. Hmm?
It wouldn't be just like fish, would it? These things, they need hands, tentacles. Will you get the animal specimens?
No, just plants and a small lizard thing.
Well, we'll have to get one of those things that set off the alarm last night. But to heck with the rest. We'll let HQ worry about that. I'll pack up, make ready. You go and get that thing.
Huh?
I said go and get that animal thing.
Then we leave, huh?
Yes.
But do you think we need one of those things that...
set the alarm off last night? Yes.
Okay. You wouldn't like to have a shot at getting one and let me pack up.
No.
Okay.
Okay, then.
I think I'll just smoke a cigarette before I leave. Won't have much time if I'm to get one of those things. Just 5 minutes, and then I'll... You?
No, thanks.
Queer.
Huh?
The place. It's queer. It's the queerest world I've ever been on. You know, usually there's all sorts of things. You know, different, of course, because every world's different, but somehow identifiable. You know, you can relate the things you find, discover, with other things on Earth or Deneb or Helestra or... You know, but here... There's hardly any insects, you notice that. And all that still sea out there. On Earth, any place on the whole planet, there'd be seabirds flying about, crawling, little crabs scuffing about the sand, seaweed, everything you can think of. But here, it's like a kid's toy. A model.
Grindle, of course, was talking for the sake of talking. He didn't want to go and hunt the animal. He wasn't afraid of the animal, of course. He'd hunt a larger, more dangerous specimen to take back to Earth for the scientists.
I mean, intuition. Sometimes, surely, intuition's enough. If a man feels the danger, feels something somewhere's not good, then it'd be stupid to wait till he gets his head knocked off to prove it. See what I mean?
No.
I was afraid you wouldn't.
Well, I see what you mean, of course, but what'd you do?
Cigarette, I burnt my... Enjoyed that.
Okay, go and get one of those things. Okay, then we'll scoot.
Yes, okay. Right, see you.
And Grinville turned and struck off automatically down the beach. He never came back. At the end of the third hour, Wisher went to the arms locker and pulled out a heavy rifle. Then he went outside the ship again and waited.
If Grenville comes back before me, it'll be all right. Because the alarm's set to deactivate when it registers the sound pattern of either of our voices. If he comes back and doesn't see me, he'll know the alarm's on. If no one comes back, the ship will blow by itself.
The beach was wide and curved. Grenville's deep footprints were easy to follow. From out of nowhere, it seemed, a wind sprung up. Wisher welcomed it like a friend. Something at last was happening on Grenville's planet.
This is the end of it. When I get out of this, I'll go home. With Grenville or without him.
The heel prints turned abruptly into an alien forest. Wisher walked some distance farther on to a relatively clear space. He turned, stepping carefully. He started to circle the spot where Grenville had gone in. The wood around him was soggy, sterile.
Ship can take care of itself. Me, another 5 minutes and then... Grenville, my lad, I'm sorry, very sorry.
Even as Wisher fell, he knew what it was. Animal trap. He knew with a blast of glacial fear he knew. He reached for his rifle and felt the metal bite into his legs anew. But the rifle was beyond him. Out of his belt, he dragged his pistol, and in a sea of pain, held upright by the trap, he waited. Nothing came. Why? Why? This had happened to Grenville, too. Why?
Why?
Strangely, he was not afraid. He'd broken the regulations, and this had happened, and he'd expected it. He waited. But nothing came. Why?
Why?
He looked down into the hole, and he saw the hot redness of his own blood. And as he watched it bubble, he realized that he was dying.
Why doesn't something come? I can at least see what they are. I go shooting. If it comes to a shooting, why doesn't something come?
Why?
Why?
He had very little time. He realized this. But he was hopeful. He wanted so much for something to come. He needed so much to know. Why? Why? Before something came, unfortunately, he died. The traps had been dug in the night. From out of the sea, they had come to dig in the preserve. For a preserve was what the island was all that it could have been, and then returned to the sea to wait. The traps had been dug in the night. The ship had been seen from the very beginning, and its purpose understood. The best brains of the sea had gathered and planned. The enormous, manta-like people, whose name was unpronounceable, but whose technology was not far behind Earth's, met in consultation and immediately understood. It was necessary to capture the ship. Therefore, the Earthmen must be separated from it. And it was for this reason that Wisher had died. But now, to the astonishment of the things, the ship was still alive. It stood silent and alone in the whiteness of the beach, ticking and sparking within itself. And near it, on the bloodied sand, were the remains of the one who had come too close. The things waited, exultant. The conquest of space was in their hands. The day grew late and became afternoon. Within the ship, of course, there was ticking, and a small red hand moved toward zero. In a little while, the ship would blow, and with it would go the island and a great chunk of the sea. But the beings could not know. Second by second, with the utter mechanical loyalty of the machine, the small red hand crept forward. The sea near the beach was frothy and white. A cloud was forming.
Present series was adapted for broadcasting and produced by Michael McCabe. Next Friday evening at 9:30, we shall be presenting the first program in Beyond Midnight. Most people enjoy being frightened, don't they? Beyond Midnight deals with the unknown, with the ghostly. And the first program is on the air at 9:30 next Friday night, the 25th of October.
You, finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you escape.
Today, today with the performance of John Daner as Isherwood Williams, Escape brings you one of the most unusual and terrifying stories of recent years. George Stewart's powerful novel, Earth Abides.
If you should awake some morning, tomorrow morning, let's say, if you should awake to a man-dead world where virtually all of human life had been destroyed from the face of the earth, leaving behind only buildings, bridges, machines, if you should awake to such a world tomorrow morning, what would you do? Where would you go? This is the year 3. My name is Isherwood Williams. It's 3 years since I returned from the lonely mountain country of Northern California to find that mankind had virtually vanished from the earth. Some unknown virus had scourged him from his high place among animals. His great cities were tombs. His entire civilization was crumbling. I toured the emptiness that had once been called America. From the silent towers of Manhattan to the Golden Gate Bridge, I saw in all 10 human beings still alive. In the 4th month after my return to San Francisco, I saw a light on Nob Hill. It was there I found Em, who became my wife. Year 1 passed. We call it the year of the baby. Year 2, we call the year of the rats. Now it was year 3. Em, the baby, and I were struggling for existence amid the fast-decaying wealth of San Francisco.
Oh. All right, now, be careful. Careful, Em.
Isn't it funny? It always makes me feel like I'm doing something wrong.
What?
Now breaking into the biggest food store on Market Street.
It's not wrong, Em. There's no private property anymore. This city, this grocery store, it's all ours now.
But Ish, look. Look at this place.
Yeah, the rats left their mark here, all right. There's the answer to their death. They ate all the food they could get at, and they ate each other.
Oh, Ish, how horrible.
Yeah, it's a familiar pattern, Em. A species grows, dominates the earth for a short time, then dies. Oh, come on. We'll take a look at the bottles and the canned goods.
Ish, look, the labels are gone. They're eaten off.
Yeah, well, we'll just have to try to guess at the contents by the shape of the can.
Well, the bottles are easy. Here, look. Bottles of real lemon juice.
Fine. This should be corned beef.
Look at it all. Tons of it. We could live on just this forever.
No, no, Em. We can't be scavengers forever. That's why the rats died. Em, we've got to grow things. We've got to bring something new into the world. Oh, come on. Let's get some of this stuff home. During that year, Em and I found whatever we needed for ourselves and the baby in the empty, silent stores of San Francisco. We lived on the spoiling supplies of a million people. One evening, just after dusk, I suddenly noticed a strange, wavering glow in the sky over the downtown area of the city. I called Em to the window. There was a smell of smoke in the air. Fire, Em!
Ish!
San Francisco is on fire!
Ish! Isn't there something we can do?
No. There were. Must be 3 square miles of flame.
What started it, do you suppose?
We'll never know. Oily rags in the basement, some gasoline explosion. Could be any one of 1,000 causes.
Will it reach the house?
No, I don't think so. Wind's blowing it away from us. It'll burn itself out in a day or two.
I'll come away from the window.
Em. Em, do you smell gas?
I don't know.
It smells like it to me.
Open the door to the hall.
Yeah. Hey, the hall is filled with it. Hey, we've got to get out of here. Gas line must have burst. One spark in this place will blow up like a bomb.
Baby, I'll get the baby.
All right. We'll be safe on the fire escape. Hurry, Em. Here, I'll take the baby.
Be careful.
Now just hang on to the rail. Now walk slowly. Come on. We started down the fire escape. In the distance, the flames were gutting the heart of the city. Parts of Chinatown were already gone. Kept going down to street level, and then we started running.
Any second, a spark could blow the building to dust, and we ran, our breath tearing in our throats. Back against the wall, Em, the shockwave. Em, are you all right?
Oh, my God.
It's all over, Em. We're going to be all right. We moved to another section of town that had been spared by the fire. The days passed, the days and the weeks. Em and I were growing tired of the canned foods and wanted some fresh vegetables and fruit. But we needed a car. One day, Em and I found a Jeep in a garage. In the storeroom, I found new tires to replace the rotted ones the Jeep had been standing on.
Will it work?
Well, after 2 years, hard to say. I'm no mechanic.
All the cars to choose from, and we pick something like this. I always wanted a convertible. Maybe a Cadillac, a Packard.
It's more useful and more durable. Besides, it's all we need. All right, Em, let's try it. Step on the starter. Mm-hmm. No. All right, now try it. Oh, come on. Come on, start. Oh. Good, come on. Good, oh, come on.
She did it.
One night, several months later, Em shook me awake.
Ish?
Huh?
Ish, wake up.
Hmm?
There's something outside moving around.
Huh?
Right by the window.
Give me the hammer.
Be careful, Ish.
I'll be all right.
I'll come with you.
No, stay here. I'll be right back. Who's there? Girl. Come here. Oh, I won't hurt you. Come here. What are you doing?
Eileen. My name is Eileen.
Where are you from?
Eileen. Hungry.
Well, come on. Come on inside.
Eileen. Eileen. Oh, I've been looking all over for you, Eileen. Where have you been? Okay, mister. You can put that hammer down. I ain't gonna hurt you.
Oh, sure. Sure, well, come on inside. Em! Em, somebody's here!
Just Eileen and me. She's my adopted daughter. About a year ago, I found her on Main Street in Los Angeles. She was starving. Can't forage for herself, Eileen can't, so I gotta take care of her. She can't think so good.
Well, how long you been here?
About 2 days, wandering around the city. Nice city, this San Francisco. Wished I'd have visited here when it had people. Reckon I really could have had myself a time.
I'll get you two something to eat.
Well, that's mighty nice. By the way, I sure am an impolite cuss. If my name's Ezra, I don't believe I caught yours.
Isherwood. This is M.
Well, I'm happy to know you. Eileen, looks like we've met up with some real nice people.
Ezra and his new daughter Eileen stayed with us, made their home in the house next door. Now the year 3 has passed. We called it the year of Ezra. November, the year 4. A woman came a week ago. She had dark hair, dark eyes. She was alone. Ezra has taken her for his wife. June 9th, the year 5, our second son was born this day. We named him Joey.
April, the year 6. Two men and a woman have come. George says he's a carpenter. Harry worked in the bank. Well, he'll have to learn a trade. The woman is called Mabel.
Ish. Ish, you better come with me.
Well, what's the matter?
The water. It stopped running in the faucets.
Well, maybe it's just a broken pipe in your place.
No, I checked, and it ain't just my place. I've checked all the houses around, and there ain't any water running in any of them.
Maybe it's a water main under the street.
I don't think so. You know what I think?
What?
I think the water stopped way up in the mountain someplace. Ish, San Francisco's going dry.
Two weeks, not a drop of rain. Ezra, we can't go on boiling the water forever. If we're going to live, we've got to get out of here.
Yeah, but there's still all them canned goods.
That's what's wrong, Ezra. We've been living off the old instead of building something new. Look, we've got to forget that water ran out of faucets and vegetables come in cans. We've got to start growing things ourselves.
We will when the time comes, yes. I reckon.
You better come quick.
What is it, Em?
Eileen.
What's the matter with her?
She must have been drinking polluted water.
Typhoid.
Book say, Ish? What are we gonna do?
Isolate the others. Mabel can nurse Eileen.
What do we do for her? What's the treatment?
You can't shorten the disease, it says. All you can do is help make it less severe. Now, don't worry, Ezra. We'll do our best.
Eileen, she's so helpless. She don't understand.
Yeah, but you move in with us. If this thing spreads, it can wipe out all of us.
Another case.
Who is it?
George.
Move him in with Eileen. Get another bed in there.
You won't have to.
What do you mean?
Eileen's dead.
This is the year 6, a year of disease and death. I went to the drugstores, walking the misty, dark streets of the city, armed with my medical text, my hammer. I raided the dusty shelves and the long, warm refrigerators of the pharmaceutical departments. The wonder drugs had long since rotted in their vials. Some sulfur was still potent, and I used it liberally. Yet case after case of typhoid broke out. Some lived, most died, including our firstborn. Our little community, upon which I had pinned the hopes of a new birth of mankind, had dwindled from 12 persons to 7. 5 adults, only 2 children.
You've got to get some sleep, Ish.
How many of us are left, Em? Count them for me.
Ezra, George, and Mabel. My second son, Joey, and Ezra's boy. You and I.
Oh, Em. Em, what's the good of starting again? We're being exterminated from the earth, every small being of us, so things can become green again.
There are 7 of us, Ish. Once there was only me, and once there was only you. Alone and separated. There are still 7.
Oh, Em. Em, what would I do without you?
Go to sleep.
Well, you won't make the mistake a second time. Won't be any looking back. We'll forget the trains that used to run. And the tall buildings and the soft food. We'll go back to the earth. Back to the earth, Em. Back to the earth. We left San Francisco, we few survivors. We packed only the essentials, the machines, the conveniences. We left to the sun and the wind. From this time on, we'd work in the soil. The decay of the old times was behind us now. We went south and east until we came to a watered land, green with growing things. This would be our Eden. Here, without the memories of a dead people about us, we would begin mankind again.
Come here, Joey.
Yes, Daddy.
Joey, here. Sit down here next to me. I want to ask you some questions.
Sure.
Now, first of all, what year is this?
Well, that's an easy question. The year 15.
Joey, did you do your reading today?
Sure.
You like to read.
Yeah.
Joey, there's something I want to tell you. You know, there were once a lot of people like us on Earth, millions. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, I read about them. They could fly.
That's right. Well, someday there'll be millions of people again. And they'll fly again, years and years from now. But after I'm gone, there won't be anybody to show them the way. That's why I'm depending on you.
What am I supposed to do?
Learn, read, study. You're going to lead them someday, Joey, after I'm gone. Don't let them go back. You don't understand.
I think I do.
Oh, you will. Oh, look. I want to show you what I made this morning.
What is it?
It's called a bow. The guns won't be good much longer. The powder will get rotten. Guns will get rusty. You can hunt with this, kill animals for food. Yeah, look here, see? I carved it out of willow. Then I strung strips of calf hide from one end of the bow to the other. And now watch this. See here, this is the arrow.
Try.
All right, here.
Like this?
That's right. Now pull back. Hard. No. Hard. There. Now, let go.
Boy, that's swell. Can I take it outside and play with it?
Sure, but be careful with it.
Hey, Billy, look what I got. Hey, Billy!
It took thousands of years for man to pass from the spear to the bow and arrow. I've just done it in 5 minutes. This is the year 19. I have gray hair. It's odd to think of myself as an old man. Well, I'm not really 51. There are 19 numbers in a smooth piece of rock in the meadow that I chipped in with my hammer and chisel. My hammer. What would I do without my hammer? Everything is going along well. Quite a farmer now. Community is growing. There are 45 of us. Strangers that drifted in. Babies born. Maybe man is something you can't quite kill off. A stranger named Charlie came in today. I don't like him. He's gruff and hard. And his eyes... I don't like his eyes.
Sure, 3 men at a time.
Gee, Charlie, how'd you do it?
With my bare hands. Came at me all at once. I grabbed two of them and banged their heads together. They cracked like coconuts. Then the other one I knocked down and stepped on his face. Wasn't much left of him after I got through.
Gee.
It's time for a bed, Joey.
Oh, can't he tell one more, Dad?
Maybe some other night.
Okay. Good night, Dad. Good night, Charlie.
Good night, Joey.
Will you come tomorrow night?
Maybe. Great kid you got there.
What did you do in the old times, Charlie?
Oh, a lot of things. For a while, I was a stickman in Las Vegas. Used to be a fighter, too. A lot of things. You name it.
You intend to stay?
Sure I intend to stay. Why not? No other place to go. This is the only good-sized group of human beings I've seen. And believe me, I've been around. Sure, I'll stay.
And everybody works. It's the only way we can live.
Listen, you. If I want to stay, I'll stay, and I'll stay on my own terms. I don't ask anything from anybody. I live my own way. You better understand that right now.
And you better understand something before we go any further, Charlie. I've been elected to leadership in this town, and we aren't a bunch of independent individuals doing what we please. We're a community, working together. Either you accept that, or get out.
We ain't gonna get along, Mr. Isherwood Williams. And I'm staying. Good night.
Gunshot! Ish, what is it?
I don't know.
Don't go out there, Ish.
Ish, he's roaring drunk.
Where is he?
Right outside.
What's the matter? Are you afraid? Come on out!
Ish! Ish, don't go!
Well, well, well. The great Isherwood. Howdy, Isherwood.
Down that gun, you crazy fool.
Let go.
Down.
Let go of me, you.
Isher, are you all right?
Never mind me. Get that gun away from him. Get George.
Yeah. Where's George? Bring George. Let's see George take this gun away from me. Hey, George, come on and try to take this thing away from me.
Hey, what's going on here? Charlie, give me that gun.
Nobody's taking my gun away. It's mine.
Charlie.
What's mine is mine. Stay away.
Give me that gun.
Stay away, George. Stay away. I told him to stay away. George. George!
He's dead. All right, you. You've done enough damage with that thing. Hand it over.
There's only one answer. Death.
Death. You mean kill him? Murder him?
No, it's not murder, Em. You, Mabel, Nezra, and I, we're the government now. We've been elected, Council of Four. There isn't any government but us. It's not a matter of punishment. It's protecting the community from a menace, and that's what Charlie is.
But he was drunk.
All the more reason he might do it again.
Afraid so, Em. We can't take the chance.
We're like a jury.
Let's vote. We've got all the facts.
The vote's been called. Any questions?
Ish, is it right? Is it right to take a human life?
To save many lives, yes. Em, it's got to be right. We'll take a voice vote. You first, Mabel. What do you say?
Death.
Ezra?
Death.
Em? Well, how do you vote, Em?
Death.
It's unanimous. We'll carry out the sentence tomorrow morning. The Council of Four had made its decision. This was not killing in passion or rage or hatred. This was the deliberate and sane elimination of an enemy. Early in the morning, we tied Charlie to an oak tree. Ezra took Charlie's revolver. Charlie stared at him with childish disbelief. He gasped, slumped into his ropes, his mouth red with blood, his eyes swollen in death. The power of the new state was born.
Is it the new year now?
Yes, Carl. New year. Here, carry my hammer for me.
No.
It won't hurt you. My hammer, here.
No, I don't want it.
Why not?
It's magic.
Magic? My hammer?
Aunt Phyllis says your hammer's magic. She says you're magic.
Carl, it's just a plain, ordinary hammer. No, no. Carl, don't be afraid.
No, it's magic. You're magic.
Dad.
Hello, Joey.
Carl, go and play.
Sure, Dad. Goodbye, Grandfather.
Joey, what's the matter with them? They say I'm magic. My hammer is magic.
You're a legend, Dad. You're the only one left out of them all. Ezra, George, Mabel, Mother M, all gone now. Only you.
A hammer's a symbol. Symbol of leadership.
Yes. Yes, that's the way things happen.
You're the only one that's lived through from the old times.
The only one. The only one. Joey.
Yes, Dad?
I'm old. Very old. And I can't see very well. Did I make the numbers clearly?
Yes, Dad. 48. The year 48.
It's all begun again. Life. Generations and generations. O.M., if you could have lived to see your faith come true. And once there were only the two of us, alone and separated. I want to see the old once more before I die. Just once more. The bridge. The Golden Gate Bridge.
We're here, Dad.
How? How does it look, Joey? Tell me. How does the Golden Gate Bridge look?
It's old and rusty. But it's wonderful. It's beautiful.
Is there a car? Small car on the bridge?
Yes, Dad. It's still there.
Can you still see buildings across the water?
Only a few, Dad. It's mostly overgrown. But the hills behind the city are beautiful today.
Good. Joey, here. Here's the hammer.
Yes, Dad.
You're the new leader now. And the hammer has always been the symbol. Pass it on to the best of them. And, Joey, don't let them make a god of you. Let knowledge be the watchword. Oh, will you understand, Joey?
I understand, Dad.
Know the earth, Joey. Know the earth.
Dad. Men go and come. But the earth abides.
Escape is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. You have just heard Earth Abides by George Stewart, especially adapted for Escape by David Ellis. John Daner was starred as Ish with Peggy Weber as M. Featured in the cast were Michael Ann Barrett, Parley Bear, Jeffrey Silver, Paul Fries, Lou Krugman, and Larry Dobkin. The special music for Escape was arranged and conducted by Ivan Dittmars.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian Seraphic Panopoli and Stevie Farnaby.